I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. According to the FBI, people are being bought, sold, and smuggled like modern-day slaves. They're often beaten, forced into prostitution, ordered to work for little or no pay in tough conditions, and these people often have no way out, sometimes because they have no legal status in the U.S. We're continuing our election series today to discuss Proposition 35, the CASE Act, which would require which would increase prison terms for human traffickers, require convicted sex traffickers to register as sex offenders, and it would mandate law enforcement training on human trafficking. Supporters say Proposition 35 will protect children from sexual exploitation and hold traffickers accountable for their horrendous crimes. Opponents say that this is a short-sighted ballot measure that relies on a broad definition of pimping and that criminalization of prostitution is the condition that allows for exploitation. So what do you want to know about Proposition 35? How are you planning to vote and why? So to help us sort through all of the issues about Proposition 35, we have Carissa Phelps, who is an attorney, crisis counselor, mentor, advocate for runaway and homeless youth, and CEO of Runaway Girl, Inc. She's the author of Runaway Girl, Escaping Life on the Streets, One Helping Hand at a Time. And she's also a survivor of human trafficking and supports Proposition 35. Hi, Carissa. Can you hear me?
Hi, Holly.
Thanks for joining us. We are also joined by Kathleen Kim, who is a professor of law at Loyola Law School in Los Angeles, where she teaches human trafficking, immigration law, and tort. She was a co-author of the California Trafficking Victims Protection Act and a gubernatorial appointee to the California Alliance to Combat Trafficking and Slavery. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And Joshua Melvin is a staff writer for the Bay Area News Group. He covers public safety and has been covering Proposition 35. Hi, Joshua.
Hey, how's it going?
And I'm going to also invite our listeners to give us a call and let us know what you think of Prop 35 or what questions you have about it. 866-798-TALK is our toll-free number, 866-798-8255. Or you can drop us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. So, Joshua, to get us started, for our listeners who may not know, can you give us a sketch of what Proposition 35 would do and how it would actually work in practice?
Sure. I would say probably the sort of key point of Prop 35 is stiffening up the penalties for trafficking. So the law, the California state law that we have now, we've got penalties I think from between 5 and 8 years for convicted traffickers, prison sentences, and Prop 35 would boost those penalties from 12 years to life, so obviously a pretty significant sentencing difference. Also, there's the current fines for convicted traffickers are, I think, up to $100,000, and Prop 35 would boost them to $1.5 million. And the money collected in fines would then be routed to fighting trafficking, helping victims to groups that work with them. So that's kind of the centerpiece of it, but there's also the other pieces, which include that would mandate sex traffickers register as sex offenders. Obviously, that's a big deal. That you know impacts where people can live, the kind of work they can do. I mean, it's a permanent mark for the rest of your life. And there's also the requirement that I don't know if it's traffickers or if it's just sex offenders would have to turn over their internet history to authorities, which again, kind of an attempt to just to keep an eye on people. So those are, I mean, there are other provisions, but those are, in my view, the kind of the key ones.
And we'll put a link to all of that information at our website, which is yourcallradio.org. So Joshua, who put 35 on the ballot, and where did the money come from?
So this is an interesting story, actually. So the group behind it is. It's kind of a collective, but the money, most of the money is coming from Chris Kelly, a former Facebook executive. As of today, he's put, of the $2.8 million that are funding the campaign, he's put up $2.06 million, which is about 73% of the total. And police groups are the second largest supporters. They're coming in at about 20%. So it's really a lot of this is coming from his personal money. And he, it sounds like he got involved in this or got interested in this issue while working at Facebook. When I interviewed him for the story, he said, you know, he'd been kind of shocked at what people felt they could get away with in the anonymity of the internet. And he'd got involved in the issue, had tried through other means to, you know, toughen up rules, toughen up laws, and it just things had not worked out. And so he got involved with the folks behind Prop 35, and you know, they had the idea for the CASE Act. He had the ideas about some of the internet provisions of Prop 35, and they got together, and here we find ourselves today.
And that's Joshua Melvin. He's a staff writer for the Bay Area News Group. He's been covering Proposition 35. One thing to note here is that the opposition to 35 has raised no cash, the other side. And can we do one more thing, Joshua? Can we define the term? So what does trafficking actually mean? What does it officially mean?
According to the ballot measure, let me pull up the exact language. But I mean, generally, though, in talking to the advocates, their perspective on trafficking is that it's forcing someone to do something they don't want to do. So whether that's forcing a person to, you know, do domestic labor, clean a house or, you know, garden or something, or whether that's forcing someone into prostitution, it's against your will. That was. The most important definition that I walked away from from the victim's advocate.
And one thing that is a little less clear to me in reading through the proposition, it clearly addresses sex trafficking, but how does it address human labor trafficking?
So it also does address labor trafficking. This is actually an issue that came up while I was reporting on it. Prop 35. It increases labor trafficking penalties from prison sentences from 5 to 12 years for traffickers. Now, this is something that some of the victims' advocates were not very content with. They're pointing out that this creates a bit of a two-tiered system. So we have traffickers, if Prop 35 passes, labor traffickers facing up to 12 years, whereas a person who, let's say, sex traffics a minor, that trafficker could face up to life in prison. And this is something that the advocates were not very happy with. They feel like it's sort of putting victims into two different camps, because who's to say that it's worse to be sex trafficked or labor trafficked? I mean, obviously, you know, every case is different.
Well, let's turn to Carissa Phelps. Again, she's an attorney, crisis counselor, mentor, and advocate for runaway and homeless youth. She supports Prop 35. So, Carissa, why did you put Prop 35 on the ballot rather than work with legislators on this issue?
Well, we have been working with legislators on the issue.
So why put Prop 30? It's a little crackly, but you're fine. We'll let you know. So yeah, why make this a ballot proposition?
So we have been working with legislators on the issue, and every one of us go through that process. And I think fiscally, you know, it's a challenging time in California to get anything to go through. We have been successful on a couple of measures. The reality is that, you know, the people that organized this, Daphne Fung and then Sharon Brock, who helped draft it, went to the legislators and got their input on it, went to law enforcement and got their input on it, and went to service providers and received their input on it. A lot of service providers that were in the labor trafficking realm didn't pay much attention when this was being put together and the efforts were being made. Because it was so grassroots and because it was unfunded, it didn't seem like it was going to make it on the ballot. And in fact, it didn't the first time. Chris Kelly coming in and helping to support it has been positive. It's made it possible to get this on the ballot. Anybody who knows about campaigns knows that it's not a free and easy road to get to where we are right now. And it's been a long and hard road. And one thing I want to make really clear is that I absolutely support increasing penalties for labor trafficking just as much as for the sexual exploitation of youth. And we need to do that, and we can. Together, we can do that if we're working together.
And Carissa, what is your own personal story with trafficking? Maybe that could help give us a sense of the scope of this issue.
Sure. My story and so many other young children in California and also across the country are trafficked right in their own backyards. They're trafficked right in our own communities, in our own cities, on their own blocks. They experience trafficking right in plain sight. And the law enforcement officers who have been responding to them have been criminalizing them. So a child at 12 years old, I was a child, put out onto the streets after being brutally raped and sold, and I was seen as the problem. I was seen at 12 years old as a hooker, as a prostitute, and that's not okay. And that's what this proposition does. It is sweeping legislation. It does make major changes because we want to send a message that these children that are being exploited in our own backyard here in front of us, which we would not condone overseas, which we help fight overseas, we're not going to condone it here either, and we're not going to put up with it. And that's, to me, that's the message that we're sending with this legislation, and then obviously helping law enforcement understand that these are children, they're being victimized, and they need services, and they need assistance to get away from the people who are exploiting them.
So how in your particular case, when you were 12 and raped, how would a Proposition 35, had it been in place, how would that have helped you?
Well, I would have been recognized as what I was, which was an enslaved person, somebody who had been captured by someone else and forced to go out and sell myself, where I didn't even have money come into my hand. It went into the hands of this pimp trafficker who had done this to many girls and young women, not just me. He had a whole history of being a trafficker and felt like he could get away with it, again, in plain sight, even to a 12-year-old girl. And what would have changed if Proposition 35 would have been there is that, you know, law enforcement who saw me on the street, who would police the street, would have seen me as the victim instead of as the criminal.
And let me turn to Kathleen. Kathleen Kim is a professor of law at Loyola Law School, and she was co-author of the California Trafficking Victims Protection Act. Kathleen, it's obvious that you work to end human trafficking. Why are you opposed to Prop 35?
So I've been working in the field of anti-human trafficking for quite a long time, ever since the inception of the Federal Trafficking Victims Protection Act. And, first as a victim service provider, focusing on the civil rights of trafficked persons, and then later as an academic who continues to work on trafficking cases. And there are certainly portions of Prop 35 that I agree with, but there are some, I think, unintended consequences of the text of the initiative that I think might best be circumvented by not voting for Proposition 35. And so I'll see up front that I come at this from a victim's victim advocate perspective. And one of the primary benefits of the current California anti-trafficking law is that we offered a very robust civil remedy and also a mandatory restitution provision for the actual victims of trafficking. Prop 35 aims to increase criminal penalties against traffickers by increasing mandatory fines against traffickers up to $1.5 million. And what that in fact does, from a civil rights perspective, is actually diminish the source of assets available to the actual trafficking victims when they decide to hold their traffickers directly accountable in civil court.
Wait, can you explain how that happens? I'm not sure that I understand it. So Prop 35 would increase the penalties, but you're saying that would not go to the victims?
Yes, correct. So those penalties would go to both governmental agencies as well as non-governmental victim service providers who have not yet been identified and would be identified by the California Emergency Agency. So what that does is that these are criminal penalties. So these are penalties that will be paid to the state, and then the state will distribute these to various agencies. These are not penalties that would be paid directly to victims. I was a civil rights lawyer. I directly represented trafficked persons who are civil litigants in court against their traffickers. And this was a primary way for them to directly hold their traffickers liable, for them to directly vindicate their rights, and to be compensated for all of the abuse that they had endured during the trafficking activity for many years, very egregious abuses. And this was a primary way for them to become whole again. Now, by mandating criminal penalties up to $1.5 million, this would, in fact, very likely make these traffickers judgment-proof as defendants and make them unviable to sue in civil court.
So is that your main opposition to Prop 35?
Yes, that is my main opposition to Prop 35. I realize that the good intentions of the drafters of the initiative. But also again, I come from this as a victims' rights advocate, and I have to be very careful and thoughtful about the way that measures are written in order to prevent unintended consequences that may negatively impact the trafficking survivors.
Okay, you just heard from Kathleen Kim. She's a professor of law at Loyola Law School in Los Angeles. We're also speaking with Carissa Phelps, who's an attorney, crisis counselor, and mentor, and advocate for runaway and homeless youth. We're talking about Proposition 35 on the November ballot. It would increase penalties for human trafficking. And you can call us with your questions at 866-798-798. Talk. It's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. What do you want to understand about Proposition 35? If you work in law enforcement, how would it affect you? If you're a victim, how would it affect you? 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255. You can also email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let me go back to Carissa. The San Diego Union Tribune said, like most citizen initiatives, Proposition 35 is not perfect. Some provisions are imprecise, sometimes out of sync with federal law, or otherwise problematic. So if you said that this proposition might be imperfect, but it's a step in the right direction, what is your thought on that?
Well, I mean, first to answer Kathleen's concern, I think, you know, I was prepared for that because I know Kathleen's work and it's amazing, and she's done amazing work in the civil, you know, the civil rights area and creating avenues for attorneys to come in and enforce the rights that we have as human beings to freedom. And her focus has been largely with immigration law, and there are certain laws that she has access to protect those civil causes of action that she has. There's a long list of them. They're not only the Traffic Victim Protection Act, but the Traffic Victim Protection Act doesn't go away. Civil remedies don't go away. What is being said is that if a very high judgment comes down, or this $1.5 million fine is levied, that there won't be any money left over for the attorneys to come after the trafficker and make it a viable win for the victim. Now, there's not a lot of civil cases that have gone forward, even since 2000, when CVPA provided for civil action and the civil right. I want to see more of civil cases. I want to see young girls be able to hold, you know, the people that are exploiting them, including the hotels, the hotel chains, the taxi drivers, the enterprises that are involved in exploiting them. And I want to work with Kathleen and those team of civil attorneys to make sure that happens. But the fact that there's money going to go into law enforcement training and to victim services, it doesn't take away that there's also going to be victim restitution that's going to be paid in the criminal case, if there is a criminal case. And that's the big if, is there's so many people that are at risk here. We're talking about like 1.3 million, you know, or upwards of 2 million, some people say, kids that are at risk because they are running away from home and they're on the street and they're vulnerable. we can't stop this all with lawsuits and with not even all with criminal cases.
Carissa, many of the victims' rights advocates organizations are saying that they were caught off guard by this proposition, and they agree that something needs to be done, but they say that they weren't consulted on what the solutions would be or some of these unintended consequences in terms of the way that that 35 is written. Can you just speak to that? Because that's been something
we've heard. That's not true. I think, you know, Daphne has a trail of emails and conversations and phone calls that she made in the very beginning, reaching out to all the major players in the organization, seeking their input, their advice, their assistance in drafting laws. I think Kathleen herself said, I'm not a criminal law expert. I'm a civil law expert, so maybe I'm not the right person to talk to when Daphne came to her. So now that people are saying, you know, there's these holes in the law or there's these unintended consequences, it's difficult to take it seriously that we're, you know, when are we going to get another chance, basically, to make an impact against slavery that could be this far-reaching and this wide-reaching and serve so many people? The civil cases are not going to serve enough people. They haven't proven effective enough. They haven't, there's not enough lawyers, going out there and representing these young women. What I get told when I try to get a lawyer to take a civil case is, bring me the perfect victim. Bring me the perfect victim and bring me the perfect defendant that has deep pockets.
So let me get Kathleen to respond here.
Let me clarify. From a traffic plaintiff's perspective, there is one of the chief obstacles in pursuing the civil court process to seek compensation is what assets the trafficker has available. And, you know, this is maybe overly legal language for the context of the call, but what the trafficker has is a very important consideration in the pursuit of a civil case. And that is one of the reasons that might make a civil case impossible to pursue. Now, there are a couple of bills that were just signed into law that were endorsed by Kamala Harris that would actually make it easier to pursue these kinds of cases because they require asset forfeiture. So she is trying to make it, trying to facilitate the possibility of an increase in these kinds of civil cases in the future. Now, when we co-authored AB 22, the original California Anti-Trafficking Victims, California Trafficking Victims Protection Act, which was signed into law by Governor Schwarzenegger in 2005, we worked directly with legislators to create a very comprehensive anti-trafficking bill that provided for...
Kathleen, I'm gonna stop you there, and we'll go back to that 2005 bill right after a break. We have a full bank of callers that I want to get to you, and we have to take a short break. You're hearing from Kathleen Kim, who's a professor of law at Loyola Law School in Los Angeles. She is opposed to Prop 35. Carissa Phelps is an attorney, crisis counselor, and mentor. She is a proponent of Prop 35. We're also joined by Joshua Melvin. He's a staff writer for the Bay Area News Group, and he covers public safety and has been covering Prop 35. And that's what we're talking about today. We're having a debate on Prop 35 and asking, how should we combat human trafficking and sexual exploitation in California? We have full lines right now, but one will open soon. You can call us at 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free line. I'm Holly Kernan. You're listening to Your Call. We'll be right back after this short break.
You're listening to Your Call here on Local Public Radio, KALW San Francisco. To take part in today's conversation, call 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Let us know if you're a first-time caller. We always like to hear new voices. And if you'd prefer to write rather than call, the email inbox is feedback@yourcallradio.org, or you can post a message at yourcallradio.org.
For those of you joining us now, I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. Tomorrow, we'll discuss how Indigenous people are fighting for environmental justice. Friday, of course, is our weekly media roundtable, where we speak with journalists about the coverage of the week's news. And today, how should we combat human trafficking and sexual exploitation in California? We're having a debate about Proposition 35. You can email us your questions at feedback@yourcallradio.org. You can also call us at 866-798-8255. That's a toll-free number. I'll give it out in a minute when we have some more open lines. We're talking with Carissa Phelps, who is in favor of Prop 35, and Kathleen Kim, who is opposed to Prop 35. And right before the break, Kathleen, you were talking about California Attorney General Kamala Harris's statewide human trafficking work group that was convened to examine California's current and future level of response to human trafficking. And then you started to tell us about the 2005 law on human trafficking, and I had to stop you before the break. So go ahead and continue.
Okay, great. Thank you. So we aim to enact a comprehensive measure that puts victims' rights as a first priority. And so in addition to the civil remedy, we created access to state social services. We also enacted a caseworker privilege for the confidential relationship between caseworkers and their victims. We provided for mandatory restitution for victims, et cetera. We also enacted criminal provisions against human trafficking, which already have been noted as having relatively low baseline sentences. The idea being that sentencing enhancements could be imposed by prosecutors in courts with their discretion, depending on the facts of every case. Every human trafficking case is different. There's a continuum of abuses that occur, some very egregious abuses, whether it's labor or sex. Within labor trafficking cases, sexual exploitation is often an occurrence. And those facts need to be evaluated case by case, and those sentencing enhancements imposed, depending, once again, on the facts of the case. We aim to create an anti-trafficking bill that was not a criminal enforcement approach only, because we wanted to put victims' rights, again, as a first priority. Criminal enforcement is important to combat human trafficking, but it's not the only avenue. It's not the only approach. And Prop 35, again, while it's well-intentioned, it is a criminal enforcement approach to human trafficking. Some of the fixes in the criminal laws I agree with, but some of them I don't. And if there were additional victims' rights provisions written into the initiative, then I would see it as a more comprehensive measure. But without that, I think that it's an approach that doesn't fully advance the direction that anti-trafficking advocates ought to be going into, going toward to protect victims' rights and provide further access to relief.
You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan, and now let's go to some of our callers. Roberta in Richmond, welcome to Your Call.
Hi, thanks a lot. I have two questions. One, I'll tell you what my concern is based on what has happened with the drug laws. We're talking about unexpected consequences. I'd like to know what the average trafficker profile is. That's one thing. What does it mean when someone does something against their will? How is that spelled out?
Okay, so who
is apt to be caught up in this?
Okay, so stay on the line for us, Roberta, and let's just start getting a response to some of that. Who is a trafficker? What does a trafficker look like?
Okay, well, I took the question a little bit differently. I've done a lot of work in this area regarding what it means to subjugate another person's will or to overcome another person's will. And that answer is derived from a lineage of case law beginning from the early implementation of the 13th Amendment, which is what does it mean to keep someone in voluntary servitude? And it means quite a lot of things. And so with chattel slavery, we saw direct physical violence, physical restraint. Then with peonage, we saw restraint through laws, through criminal sanction. And then with involuntary servitude, we saw an expansion of the means in which one could be held against their will, which involved coercion. And now with human trafficking laws, starting with the Federal Trafficking Victims Protection Act, coercion is defined to include not only direct physical threats and threats of legal restraint, but also psychological threats. And so now a trafficker can hold someone into involuntary servitude or hold someone in forced labor conditions through coercive, psychologically coercive means.
And that's
what this law says. How does it define it?
It's defined very broadly.
Threats
of psychological, financial, or reputational harm that is sufficiently serious to hold someone, a trafficking victim, in those trafficking victim circumstances in servitude.
And does Carissa, do you have a response to that question as well?
Well, I don't think Kathleen is opposed to having it be a broad definition because slavery is, you know, what we're talking about, and it could happen in a number of ways, as she explained. And, you know, in addition to that, the definitions and the what she described as being trafficking, the federal law is really very clear about an under 18-year-old, a minor, who is being trafficked. Does not, in order to prove that that person has been trafficked, you don't need to show force, fraud, or coercion because of the person's age. And that is helpful in a criminal case where you have a child who's been trafficked. It's like, you know, statutory rape. If you're trafficking children, it's pretty much clear that you have the power and control over them if you're the adult and you're trafficking a child. So that's the other element.
And over 18?
Well, the force, fraud, or coercion would not be required for minor victims of sex trafficking, but it would be required for minor victims of labor trafficking. And just to give the caller an example, so a threat of serious harm that might constitute trafficking would be, you know, if you don't continue to work in my factory, then I will hurt your family, or I will hurt your child. Or if you don't continue to continue working as my domestic servant, then I'm going to call the police and have you arrested. You know, things like that. Those are threats that are not directly physical, but still constitute enough psychological intimidation that might establish a human trafficking violation.
We have an email from Rosario who says, California is unfortunately host to 3 of the top 10 cities with a high intensity of child prostitution, according to the FBI report from 2009. L.A. is number 1, San Francisco is number 7, San Diego is number 8. She goes on to write, our girls are being raped on a daily basis. We need to protect our kids. These are our natural born citizens. This is important. Let's go to Jane in Bakersfield. Welcome to your call, Jane.
Hi. I do support 35, and I feel that it is much stronger than the current state laws. The talk recently, or just now, about kids underage. Apparently, under current state law, if a child under 18 does not say that they're forced, there doesn't seem to be a trafficking penalty for the trafficker. And I would think that under 18, any prostitution, whether as a person who is in charge of him or whatever, this would automatically be considered forced.
Isn't that already statutory rape?
Pardon me?
Isn't that already statutory rape?
That I don't know legally. I don't have legal answers on that. But my point is the penalty for that has been under case the Prop 35 has been changed so that there is a penalty, even if the child is afraid to say that they're forced. And also with regard to labor trafficking, the current state law is only the maximum that you can get for forced labor services is 5 years. Federal is up to 20 years. We're asking for about double the state increase in the forced labor services. And in addition, there is no mandatory law enforcement training. So a lot of our law enforcement have not been trained to recognize trafficking victims or trafficking situations.
So let's go to Joshua for this one, because as I was reading it, it seemed to mandate 2 hours of training. What's actually in there for law enforcement training, Joshua?
Yes, that's correct. That I think it's detectives, like people who are working in the field and who are working on investigations will be required to have 2 hours of training on recognizing and kind of appropriate responses to trafficking cases.
And is 2 hours of training, is that a big step up from what has been happening? Is that enough to get officers really familiar with the complexities of this issue?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say. It's certainly better than nothing, and that's what's, you know, right now there is no requirement for officers to be trained on this. And so, but what happens in 2 hours, I think it's really going to, you know, it's going to depend on the what the program is. I'm not sure if there's actually like a sort of a list of things they have to learn in those 2 hours. You know, I'm not exactly sure how that's going to all shake out. So at the very least, though, it is good for officers to have to learn something about this, because that's something that did come up when I was speaking to victims advocates, is that it's not like someone's going to, you know, hold up a red flag and say, I am a trafficked person. I mean, a lot of times it would, you know, you would have to ask some questions. You'd have to be familiar with this issue to spot some of the signs. I mean, it might not be immediately obvious to you.
And in Carissa's case, she was saying that she was actually treated as the criminal.
Yes, and that does happen too. I mean, in the instance of prostitutes, I mean, that's a person who could end up also facing charges themselves. And I mean, but the bigger fish obviously would be to get the trafficker.
And there is no 12-year-old prostitute. I just want to be very clear about that.
Yeah.
There is no 15-year-old prostitute. There is no such thing. These are children that are being victimized. And Holly, as you asked, is this statutory rape? Yes, this is rape. This is rape. And they're not only being statutory rape, there's forced rape going on. There's a history of abuse, usually a continuum of abuse that has happened, that law enforcement needs to understand, must understand. They also must understand the dynamics of traumatic bonds. And why does this girl keep going back? Why does she say she loves him? Why? And they ask these questions and they dismiss the girls and they dismiss these cases because they seem to have an attachment to the person that is enslaving them. And that kind of training can be done. I trust that, you know, giving everyone the 2 hours of training, what that will lead to is some people will step up and take this on as and become, we'll have more units that are focused on it and have more extensive training on it in the sexual assault units and such and areas like that. And
So Carissa, can I ask you something, though, about adult sex workers say that they're likely to be unfairly targeted by Prop 35. Can you just respond to that?
They're not targeted at all by Prop 35, adult sex workers. Now, if you're an adult who is recruiting children, as what happened in my case, an adult woman who was on the street helped to recruit me, now you might become a target of Prop 35 for helping to traffic a minor, right? But if you're an adult engaged in work in the sexual industry, this proposition is not talking about you. Now, what I've found, what has surprised me over the time that I've been working in this for seven years, is that women have come to me who were recruited at the age of 18, 19, technically adults, right? And were recruited into the stripping industry or somehow the sex industry, and then were raped and forced and coerced to do things that they did not want to do and felt trapped and threatened and couldn't get out. So there are people that need to be rescued that are also adults in the sex industry who we're not identifying now.
And that's Carissa Phelps. She's an attorney, crisis counselor, mentor, and advocate for runaway and homeless youth, and the CEO of Runaway Girl Inc. We're also speaking with Kathleen Kim, who's a professor of law at Loyola Law School in Los Angeles, where she teaches human trafficking, immigration law, and tort. And she is opposed to Prop 35, which is what we're talking about. We're having a debate about Prop 35 and asking how should we combat human trafficking and sexual exploitation in California. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. I want to get to more calls and emails. Let's start with an email says, so basically one of the deciding factors of this proposition is whether you believe that the government should receive payment or if the victim deserves payment for the violator's actions. Just very quickly, Carissa, do you want to respond to that?
Sure. I mean, this doesn't take away from what the victims receive, and actually more people will be served on a wider scale.
Okay, then let me get, so you're saying more people will be served. Kim? Kathleen Kim?
So the direct victim restitution and direct civil compensation will certainly be circumvented by what is proposed by the initiative.
And then we have another email from Cindy who asks two questions. How many civil lawsuits have there been in California under California law? And secondarily, is Professor Kim saying that she'd rather children continue to be mistreated so civil lawyers can sue traffickers for more money?
Oh, no, that's not the only point that I wish to make with the initiative. The larger point that I'd like to make with respect to my critique of the initiative is that we shouldn't be passing laws that will have unintended consequences on trafficking victims. And we should be narrowly tailored with our responses. And certainly legislative fixes need to happen all the time. Since the first enactment of the Federal Trafficking Victims Protection Act, it's been amended four times. And each time that it's been amended, there have been very broad advancements towards greater victim protection and relief. I agree that we should continue to work on our own laws. I just think that we need to be very careful, thoughtful, and considerate with the kinds of changes we propose to make so that we don't enact laws that will end up having consequences that we don't want on the victim population.
And let's go back to our callers. Maxine in San Francisco, welcome to Your Call.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I'm down here at San Francisco State University registering students to vote and listening to your show. You know, I'm the state registered opponent to Prop 35, and I just wanted to chime in on a couple of issues I think that listeners might be interested to know is that Prop 35's new broad definition of what is a commercial sex act is going to make for more of us consensual adults to become victims. And in the larger, broader definition that supersedes actually the federal definition of what is a sex trafficker is even more expanded under Prop 35. And you can clearly hear the proponents want people like cab drivers and a bunch of innocent people to be targeted under this ballot proposition because, you know, they are looking for justice and we're all looking for justice. But these new broad definitions in combination with the financial incentives that Prop 35, you know, gives all of these high fines and fees to the police and to all these nonprofits is, you know, just part of the ballot box budgeting that has bankrupted the state. And that's
Hold on, Maxine.
We're asking people to vote no on it. But the other important thing is voters got to listen that, you know, they are arresting children, people under 18, for prostitution. They are going to jail for prostitution. And that is no way to rescue anybody. And that is our biggest reason we want voters to reject this ballot initiative and send it back to the state legislators because the state legislators have been dealing with this issue.
Okay, Maxine, stay on the line. I would like to get a response from Carissa, please.
So this actually helps us not to, and that's my biggest thing too, is we can't criminalize the person that has been victimized. And so this would help us not do that. So if someone has been trafficked, they can't be charged with a crime that's related back to that sex trafficking. They can't be charged with prostitution if they're a minor, in other words. So this would fix that in a major way. And it would also provide the tools and the resources that are needed, and the people that would be paying for it are not taxpayers, they're the traffickers. And you know what, if the cab drivers and hotels and other businesses that are somewhat, you know, there are many of them that are legitimate, but some of them are profiting off of trafficking, then they need to be held accountable criminally and civilly.
So is that what Maxine is referring to when she says taxi drivers could potentially be penalized under this?
Well, anyone who would transport or aid in trafficking a child, so... You know,
so, but what if I'm a taxi driver? Let's say two people get into my car, an adult and a child. I don't pay attention to who they are. Could I? It turns out it's a sex trafficker and a child sex slave. Could I then be prosecuted?
No. We're talking about enterprises, criminal enterprises,
okay.
Where it's a regular thing. Where you know I am your driver. If you want me to deliver you a girl, or if you want to be delivered to a young girl. Then.
Gotcha. Okay, so I'm going to go back to Maxine very quickly. Maxine, did you...
Yeah, thanks for that. So this is the problem, is that the FBI and the local law enforcement do anti-prostitution sting operations. That is the primary means upon which to identify trafficked victims. And the problem is that is the primary means to identify trafficked victims. That will not change under Prop 35. In fact, that practice will expand under Prop 35 because of the financial and political incentives that are written into Prop 35. And that's why we're against it, and that's why we're asking voters to vote against it. They are arresting kids. What goes on in these prostitution sting operations is the police get to have sexual contact, legal sexual contact with potential victims and adult consensual prostitutes because it's legal under the entrapment laws. Prop 35 does nothing to stop that practice.
Okay, Maxine, just in the interest of time, I'm going to have to say thank you for your call and go to our next caller. That's John in San Jose. Hi, John. Welcome to your call. Oops, I guess we don't have John. How about Anthony in Santa Cruz? Welcome to your call.
Hello.
Hi, Anthony.
Hello?
Yep, you're on.
Hi, I just wanted to make a comment. It seems obvious that the benefits are going to be going to the government, who we all know don't always do their job appropriately or efficiently.
What do you mean, Anthony? What do you mean when you say? What do you mean when you say that?
Always hire a lawyer or get a pro bono lawyer to defend them and go after their aggressor. And it seems like this is going to divert that money that will be paid as a fine to the government, and where the victim won't get anything. And it seems to me that's not the unintended, or I don't know how intended it was, but an unintended effect of this bill.
Well, let's have both of our guests, both Kathleen and Carissa, respond to that, because that's been a question that's come up a number of times.
Right. So thank you. I agree with the view of the caller. But again, this is just one example of the way that the initiative may have unintended consequences on trafficking survivors. And that's why I'm opposed, not because of other attributes of the initiative that I think should be fixes. In the current legislation, but then we should go through the legislative process to enact those. Now, I just want to make a couple of points for clarification. The text of the initiative does criminalize any individual who deprives or violates a personal liberty of another with the intent to affect forced labors or a wide variety of cross-reference statutes related to the prostitution crimes. And so it is any person or any individual, not a large criminal network. Or there isn't any text that indicates that. Perhaps that was the intention, but it's not demonstrated in the initiative. The other thing that the initiative does is now one of the cross-reference sections that would qualify as a human trafficking violation is extortion. That was written into the original California anti-trafficking law, and that's because extortion does occur when someone is forced or defrauded or coerced into doing something that they don't want to do. With the attachment of the sex offender registry, those perpetrators of extortion also become sex offenders that have to register. The sex offender registry is not in my area of expertise, but to me, the initiative looks like two different legislative proposals that are put together in one dealing with the expansion of sex offender registry, and one dealing with human trafficking and other crimes involving sexual exploitation.
Okay, so we're running out of time here, Kathleen, so I'm going to just get one more caller. Let's hear from John in San Jose. Hi, John.
Hi. My name is John Vanek. I'm a retired lieutenant with the San Jose Police Department, and I was in charge of our human trafficking task force for several years. And I think, obviously, you're seeing the complexity of this issue. I would just like to make two points. One is that it's very complex, and so the response to this should really be kept in the hands of those people that have extensive expertise working in all of the facets responding to human trafficking. The other thing I'd like some of your callers to also recognize, and many people don't realize this, but there's actually been a pretty vibrant response to human trafficking in California. You've had federally funded task forces based within local law enforcement agencies in San Francisco, Oakland, San Jose, Orange County, Los Angeles, San Diego. You have state-funded tasks. Those same task forces have been funded by the state, including additional task forces in Fresno, Riverside, and Sacramento. So there are plenty of people doing the work, but this is highly specialized work. And Prop 35 is very broad. It has too many potential harmful consequences. And if we do anything that harms one single victim of trafficking, that helps them or prevents them from getting through this terrible ordeal, then we're just going down the wrong road. And
thank you, John.
That's why I urge everybody to oppose 35.
Thank you, John. I want to just get final thoughts from our guests, and we just have about a minute to go. So let's go ahead and start with Carissa. Carissa, what can you say to the voters as to why they should support Prop 35?
Well, if we don't support Prop 35, then we leave children unprotected and many children. And I think that is a harm, and we leave them on the streets without protection and continually criminalized.
Kathleen, I'm just going
to
give you
protect more people.
We're just totally out of time. Kathleen, Kim, just one sentence on why you oppose Prop 35.
Anti-trafficking initiatives require a comprehensive approach that is sensitive to the complex sociological dimensions of trafficking. The initiative, unfortunately, doesn't meet that that objective.
And I am so sorry that we haven't had more time to continue with this discussion. We'll put a link to web resources at yourcallradio.org. You can continue to post comments there and continue this conversation and get information about Prop 35 and all of the ballot measures. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for all your calls and emails. I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call.
How are Indigenous people struggling for environmental justice? On the next Your Call, we'll honor Indigenous Peoples Day by speaking with Native activists on the front lines of environmental battles, from the tar sands in Canada to coal mining at Black Mesa to fracking, toxic waste, and deforestation. Join us at 10 or email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. What can we all learn from how Native communities relate to the environment? It's Your Call with Rose Aguilar and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco, with special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz.